Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Honestly, for me, I like the human element, the old way of doing it. We've got that all-star story, plus weapons reserves, but first, crypto bill vote fails to get 100% re-thug-looking support despite Trump's call. Grabbing this from Cointelegraph, James, which, have I said, always to me looks like Cointelegraph. Cryptocurrency-related bills backed by U.S. President Donald Trump failed to clear a key procedural step in the House of Representatives on Tuesday despite the president's threats and a public push for action. Trump had urged Republican lawmakers to get the first vote done this afternoon on legislation to regulate payment stablecoins as part of a larger effort to pass crypto legislation before they all go on August recess. In a Tuesday post on the social media platform he owns, Trump ordered all Republicans to vote yes on the Guiding and Establishing National Innovation for U.S. Stablecoins Genius Act, a bill designed to regulate payment stablecoins in the U.S. The legislation is one of three bills, along with one to address market structure and central bank digital currencies that Republican House leaders have been pushing as part of the party's Crypto Week plans, which this is really the first I'd heard of that. The president may have been referring to a House resolution to consider the three bills and a defense bill, which failed to get support from a majority of lawmakers present on Tuesday. At least 13 Republicans may have voted against the resolution. The Genius Act, which passed through the Senate in June with bipartisan support despite initial resistance from many Democrats, expected to head to a floor vote in the House that was on Tuesday. Trump, under personal scrutiny, and it's not for the only reason on this episode or this week, for his role in pushing the stablecoin legislation due to his involvement in his family-backed crypto company, World Liberty Financial, WLF, which sounds like WWF, which issued its own stablecoin and suggested a conflict of interest. Something we'd all get mad about if Pelosi was doing it. Bloomberg reported on Friday that Binance helped create WLF's USD1 stablecoin, also used by an Abu Dhabi investment firm to settle a $2 billion investment in the crypto exchange. World Liberty Financial has received a significant portion of its funding from overseas, which has brought about serious ethical and national security concerns, said California Representative Maxine Waters' office. You know you're not doing well when CNN or Maxine Waters is dunking on you. Foreign investment is not just a business deal. It's a direct payment to the sitting U.S. president with the goal of currying favor and influence within the White House. I mean, I was going to say, oh, geriatric Congress critter crazies. Who cares what they think? But they're right. Broken clock. Many Democratic leaders have responded to Republicans' push for the digital asset bills with their own anti-crypto corruption week agenda. Boo Coke, drink Pepsi. They're calling for amendments in the three bills to address consumer protection and prevent the president, the vice president, and members of Congress from holding or promoting crypto over concerns with conflicts of interest. So, say things they don't have a personal stake in. And can we just say, kids, you're both just the worst. In related news, Bitcoin creator Satoshi Nakamoto is the world's 11th richest person, if they exist at all. James, this sounds like another kind of situation. Again, you talk about the Bitcoin psyop. This sounds like another situation of stealing the real and selling us back the fake. Bitcoin, in this case, being the real.
You know, I would only disagree only to say, well, Bitcoin, I think, maybe used to be the real or potentially could have been the real. But I think they stole that from us, too. And if people want more on that, there is an excellent book by Steve Patterson and Roger Ver called Hijacking Bitcoin that goes through exactly how Bitcoin was hijacked. And they stole that real, or at least potential real, and gave us the fake. But here's the second order of that, because the system just keeps going and propagating itself. And for people who do not understand the stablecoin psyop and what is going on right now, there's more that you should definitely learn about that. So in my own humble attempt to spread awareness of that, I recently wrote Bitcoin $100,000, What Does It Mean?, in which I talked about the stablecoin psyop and what it's about. But people who want even more depth of detail on that should, of course, go to Mark Goodwin and Whitney Webb, who co-authored a series of articles on this last year, including Trump Embraces the Bitcoin Dollar, stable coins to entrench U.S. financial hegemony. So long story short-ish, and you really should go to these articles for more detail on this, but this is a win-win for the oligarchs, because they not only get to continue to inflate the never-ending, never-stopping monetary bubble, and they not only get to tokenize that debt for the blockchain era, and they not only get to find a way to solve the problem of how to continue to propagate the U.S. dollar hegemony into the 21st century amidst the death of the petrodollar, which people will remember was the system that Henry Kissinger jury-rigged in order to save the dollar after the collapse of Bretton Woods, so to keep that can kicking down the road. But they also provide a way for people like the Trumps and other families to get involved in monetizing this never-ending big, beautiful bubble that is being blown by the oligarchs. So it is win-win for the oligarchs and the broligarchs, by which I mean ka-ching, ka-ching. Anyway, there's a lot more detail. I'll throw that in the show notes if people want to start reading in on this, but I think I'll have more to say on this in the future.
James, I just glanced over at this moment as we speak. Bitcoin is right now at $118,000 right now. So it is booming, or like the meme I saw in my members' memers room earlier, Bitcoin's kind of booming. It's more a show that the dollar is dooming, if you will. I've heard it put in a way that stable coins are anything but, due to their inability to consistently maintain their peg to the assets they are supposed to back. This is not financial advice. I am not a lawyer. I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and this is episode 597 of New World Next Week. And if you're wondering, if you feel like you miss out, like what's a great way that you can make some of that scratch? Sell weapons to both sides of a conflict. Trump to send 300 million in weapons to Ukraine, drawn from the Pentagon reserves. The pentagram, as I like to call it. Grabbing this from RonPaulInstitute.org. For the first time, once and future king, DJ Trump set to use his authority to send weapons directly to Ukraine from Pentagon reserves. Reuters reports, citing two sources familiar with the matter, after last week's brief halt in shipments and now subsequent reversal. Until now, the Trump administration had only transferred arms that were previously approved during Brandon's prior term. Trump is likely to use the Presidential Drawdown Authority, PDA, which enables the president to quickly provide military aid in emergencies, despite long-running fears that America could lack for key military hardware of fighting its own wars against a major power. It remains that the U.S. has not fought a direct war with a great power in quite some time, going back to the World War II era. Trump this week indicated he would send more weapons to Ukraine amid intensifying Russian advances and aerial strikes after the prior week saw hundreds of drones sent nightly. More than 3 years after Russia's invasion of its neighbor, Trump's team will identify arms from U.S. stockpiles to send to Ukraine under the Presidential Drawdown Authority, the sources said, with one saying they could be worth around $300 million. This is expected to include Patriot air defense missiles and medium-range rockets, which is somewhat surprising and alarming given the amount of Patriots the Pentagon has just blown through defending Israel amid all those Iranian attacks. According to The Guardian, the United States only has about 25% of the Patriot missile intercepts it needs for all of the Pentagon's military plans. After burning through the stockpiles in the Middle East in recent months, an alarming depletion that led to the Trump administration freezing the latest transfer of munitions to Ukraine. Do you remember we used to be able to say, Obama dropped the most bombs ever, he ran out of bombs, and then Trump did even worse than that. As has been noted earlier, U.S. weapons manufacturers can only produce approximately 500 Patriot missiles per year. The U.S. stockpile, they can't GMO more of them. The U.S. stockpile of air and missile defenses have been drained to aid Ukraine during the war with Russia. Missile interceptors are in short supply in the West. Trump's fresh up to $300 million infusion would reverse Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's decision to pause shipments while a more thorough review can be made after he expressed wariness of expanding support to Ukraine, which I think a lot of people who voted for MAGA were also expressing their not support for this. Trump asked Zelensky if he could strike Moscow if the U.S. provided longer-range weapons. This seems fairly inflammatory. Trump later denied he was sending long-range weapons to Ukraine and said that Ukraine shouldn't target Moscow. Now that you found me out. And U.S. weapons supplies to Ukraine never stopped, says those bastards at the Kremlin. The arms deliveries have continued despite claims of disruptions, spokesman Dmitry Peskov has said. James, the situation just keeps getting worse.
It certainly does, but I'm thoroughly confused. Because, James, isn't this the war that was absolutely going... He was going to end on day one of his new administration, right? And all he had to do was make a phone call because he knew exactly what to say to Zelensky and Putin to get this all called. Oh, wait, no. Oh, that was all fake news. No, of course, he never promised that. And what, Trump lying to the gullible rubes who would vote him into office in order to gain power? We certainly don't have any relateds that will flesh that out in any greater detail, right? Anyway, yes, I am not going to use the canard, which you have pointed out, I've pointed out before. People always use, oh, this is just a distraction from that. But while you were busy with other stories, and for good reason, like the Epstein story, yes, the Russia-Ukraine conflict continues to rage on, and in fact seems to be escalating at the moment. Just a couple examples of stories that are floating through the news wires as we're recording this. Russia unleashes most massive attack since war's start on Zelensky's hometown. But on the flip side of that coin, Ukrainian hackers claim to have destroyed major Russian drone makers' entire network. So, who knows? Fog of war, there's a lot of PR that goes around that may or may not be true. But at any rate, there are major things happening in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, and I think it deserves a bit of attention. And on that note, and especially on the note of the drone strikes, I will be writing specifically about that in my editorial this weekend, so people can stay tuned for more on this, which I think is an incredibly important conflict because it is increasingly showing us the future of warfare itself.
It kind of looks like Syria has turned into a hot war situation as well. But in those Donfrey Trumpstein updates that you were referring to, Democrats gloat as MAGA world explodes over the Epstein files. They were on Pam's desk, but there's no desk here, you crazy conspiracy theorists. Trump calls Epstein conspiracy a hoax, turns on MAGA weaklings. He sure does turn them on. Oh, wait, you mean he's now turned against them. That coming from The Guardian. And again, and rightly so. Rightfully so, of course. And I made the joke, what, last week? The Democrats don't want to look at, of course, Epstein's relationship to Bill Clinton and all of their people. But it looks like they're willing to go that way just to get Trump. And why not? Absolutely. Our third and final story on this New World Next Week episode 597 here in summer, and hope that you, wherever you are out there, I hope you're doing safe and sound, and then that you're not freaking out because the world would like you to freak out and think everything's going to fall apart. But you got the power within you, and we appreciate you being here. We've been doing this for over 15 years as New World Next Week. Have we? Yeah, we've cracked. Yeah, we're over, I think, over 15 years, James. So what might seem, I guess, like a dumb summer story, and it is, but it has wider implications, and again, sort of speaks to the massive changes that we might see. Major League Baseball putting automated balls and strikes to the test in the All-Star Game this week. Some pitchers not thrilled. The hottest topic in Atlanta this week, ahead of the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. They kind of take a break and all the best players do an exhibition game against each other. None of it counts. They do the home run derby as well. It's just kind of the fun break time. The biggest topic wasn't a player or a coach or a manager. It's not even human. For the first time, the Midsummer Classic is going to be using automated technology to allow pitchers, catchers, and batters to challenge the call of balls and strikes, a system that's already been in use in the minor leagues and in spring training, but had never been put in place at a major league park. It's a technology that has the potential to revolutionize the game, a system that might forever change one of the ficklest parts of an incredibly fickle game, the ever-changing, unpredictable strike zone put in place by all-too-human home plate umpires. This is where we'd see the Leslie Nielsen naked gun, late calls of safe and dancing around. According to MLB, the challenge system will have the same rules as were used in spring training. Each team starts the game with two two challenges, and they keep their challenges if you're deemed to have won your challenge. Only the pitcher, catcher, and hitter can challenge a call, and the system is put into place when one of those players taps the top of his cap twice. When a player would challenge a call, the game would pause and attention would turn to the stadium's massive screen beyond right center field. A virtual simulation of the pitch would be shown along with the box, the little strike zone. If you've seen baseball on TV, you've seen the little digital outline there, right there at the strike zone. And the technology would rule if the ball fell with or outside that box. Play would then resume after the short break. The phrase used most on Monday when discussing the technology was an iconic one in baseball lore, the human element. It's one of the things that can make baseball so perfectly imperfect, the ability of umpires like the hated C.B. Buckner or Phil Cuzzy to simply get it wrong and have a massive impact on a game. Sidebar, a pitcher is being investigated for maybe cheating, making bad pitches on purpose to help out Las Vegas. The human element is one of baseball's quirks that give the nation's pastime its identity. But you could also argue, nobody likes baseball. They hate it. It's slow and boring. That's why they've added the pitch clock to speed everything up over these last couple of years. When baseball went on strike in 1994, they never, ever recovered their popularity. Basketball, ever since then, has only become way more popular in the States. Chris Sale, the Atlanta Braves pitcher and reigning National League Cy Young Award winner, said, "Honestly, for me, I like the human element. I don't think the ABS is a perfect system. I like the old feel, the old way of doing it." James, this is kind of why fight clubs get crafted.
I guess so. I guess so. But you know, I'm not misreading this. So it's not going to be every pitch is going to be judged by the robots. It's just if it's challenged, right?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Okay. If someone taps their head twice.
Right. So, okay. I mean, yeah, I'm a big defender of the human element. Although, in this case, it just seems like it's just a challenge. But if and when they start replacing umpires with just this automated strike system, then yeah, I can see that. But for maybe just because I'm a blasé Canadian, so what do I care about the sacred history of baseball? But I care about the sacred history of hockey. And I will never forgive, I think it was Fox, when they started broadcasting NHL games, and they would put the purple ring around the puck so that Americans could see where the puck is, because we just can't follow where the puck is. That, to me, was sacrilegious. This, I don't know. What's your take on this?
I've grown to love it in my later years of life. I mean, I've joked now. I was like, man, if they would have done fantasy sports in high school, I would have crushed it at math. Except I would have gone, screw you, I'm not doing your jock game and I'm not going to take part. But it honestly would have helped me with my math. I think my math got better when I was working at stores and behind counters, and we just did cash before the point when you'd run a credit card to buy a stick of gum. Everything was cash, and so I was pretty slick then. I like the old school way of doing things. I think in some ways this goes along with jazz and the Constitution as being the three greatest things America ever invented. Baseball, jazz, and the Constitution. Problematic as they all may be, yeah, I like the old way of doing things. A clock seems to run against the whole nature of it. So many of the things we've actually been watching in honor of All-Star Week. We've been watching some baseball movies and some Ken Burns documentaries in the Media Monarchy community. And even the Ken Burns documentary, as voluminous and comprehensive as it is, I find myself going, oh, that's not true anymore. Oh, no, they changed that. So things have changed in the unchanging 200-year-old game. And I guess, of course, again, who's going to get swept aside? The old man yelling at the cloud generally doesn't win. So as hard as it can be, a lot of times it is not worth your emotional effort to get invested in things that you know they're going to change and that you know you have no control over. You can still throw the ball with your kids in the yard. James, you've been to some games in Japan, right? You've sent me a picture or two.
I have. I mean, I like the game. I like the game. And, well, honestly, I could see the utility of being able to call certain or challenge certain pitches, because I saw recently Ohtani got caught looking struck out looking. Is that how you say it? I forget in American how you say it. In Japanese, senshin. And he lost his mind. He was going apoplectic on the umpire, by which I mean he kind of shook his head and said some words to him as he walked back to the dugout. But it was clearly outside the strike zone. And I was thinking, you know, if they could challenge pitches, they'd challenge that one, I'm sure.
But yeah, that's the level of Ohtani flipping out on somebody.
Yeah.
and he's one of the big things I'd found myself yelling back at the Ken Burns baseball documentary about Babe Ruth, Babe Ruth, Babe Ruth. It's like, oh man, he's basically being replaced at this point. And that's the way the world is gonna go. That is New World Next Week, episode 597. It is true. It is real. The Korber Report 2017 Data Archive USB flash drives are in the house. They are on the NewWorldNextWeek.com store for a limited time. That means the 2013 to 2017 bundle is available. And James, honestly, probably what's going to happen is this is going to sell out immediately, and we'll already get the backups to make sure we can keep all these things shipping. And of course, you can't just, you know, have a bunch of information like that without having a soundtrack to learn your way forward to. I'll remind you again about the Media Monarchy music compilations. Basically, 5 days worth of hand-picked episodes. You could buy 24 hours of country, 24 hours of techno. You can find all those at NewWorldNextWeek.com as well. And I get to play the exclusive audio of these New World Next Week episodes before they are published anywhere. And again, YouTube has really been, it's been great to be back on YouTube, James. It feels like some way of like, oh man, they started, you know, carrying our show on the networks again. And it's been a nice help. James, how are you hanging in there, buddy?
Yeah, no, it's funny how that works. It's like you don't exist if you're not on certain platforms, right? No, we've been here the whole time, guys. We're still just doing what we're doing for 15-plus years, as you accurately point out, and we will continue doing it for as long as the world continues to be crazy. So I'm not suspecting that we'll run out of material anytime soon. On that note, thank you, as always, for the three stories. Looking forward to doing it again, buddy.
You too, man. Take care.